request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
This is Todd Merrill. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Aquit, Catskill, Hudson. Radio, made with radio.
Beginning Tuesday, February 9th, some of WGXC's regular programming will be interrupted and preempted because we're covering the presidential impeachment trial in Congress. Pacifica Radio will provide coverage of the presidential impeachment trial. WGXC will air all the important parts on FM at 90.7 FM. We'll air more ceremonial aspects of the impeachment trial on our All Together Now web stream at wgxc.org/listen. And when the impeachment trial is on WGXC 90.7 FM, your regular programs will be on the All Together Now channel at wgxc.org/listen. So any preempted show you can still hear at the All Together Now channel at wgxc.org/listen and click on All Together Now to hear any of your favorite WGXC shows preempted by our impeachment coverage from Pacifica Radio. Tune in for complete coverage of the presidential impeachment trial from the U.S. Senate on wgxc.org and 90.7 FM. It's WGXC's 10th anniversary this February, and all year we will be celebrating 10 years of community voices on the radio. We'll have a special live broadcast and performance May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In. And if you become a sustaining supporter or increase your sustaining support of WGXC during the February pledge drive, we'll give you a ticket if you want for the Greenville Drive-In show May 26th at 7:30 p.m. with Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields performing, Anna Frizz also performing, Catskill's Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, and Jess Spear also performing. More artists to be announced at the WGXC 10th anniversary performance, the Greenville Drive-In, May 26th. And if you become a sustaining supporter for the first time during WGXC's February pledge drive or increase your sustaining support of the community radio station, you can get a ticket to the Greenville Drive-In show with Stephen Merritt, Anna Frizz, Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, Jess Spear, and more May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In for WGXC 90.7 FM.
Now, from Survival comes an economical do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved and easy to assemble. Takes just a weekend.
Get maximum protection from nuclear fallout for your family.
See a Survival shelter today.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Edward Ruschalski of Syracuse, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Bernadette Hogan, Carl Campanelle, and Bruce Golding report in the New York Post that one of Governor Andrew Cuomo's top aides, Melissa DeRosa, apologized to other Democratic lawmakers on an audio recording about the state's handling of COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes. DeRosa said that in August, as President Donald Trump threatened a Department of Justice investigation, and I quote, "we froze," end quote, out of fear that the true numbers would, and I quote, "be used against us," end quote, by federal prosecutors. While some Republicans quickly went to, and I quote, "impeach Cuomo," end quote, after reading the story, it does not say much new. Since long before August, many Democrats and Republicans have criticized how the Cuomo administration seemed to manipulate the reporting of COVID-19 deaths between nursing homes and hospitals. DeRosa's audio admission does not address all that, saying instead, and I quote, "because then we were in a position where we weren't sure if what we were going to give to the Department of Justice or what we give to you guys, what we start saying, was going to be used against us, while we weren't sure if there was going to be an investigation," end quote. Cuomo's administration is known for rare apologies, and DeRosa offered one on the recording. She said, and I quote, "so we do apologize," end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, "I do understand the position that you were put in. I know that it is not fair. It was not our intention to put you in that political position with the Republicans," end quote. Last month, Attorney General Letitia James released a damning report estimating that the deaths of nursing home residents in hospitals would boost the total nursing home death tally by more than 50%. Health Commissioner Howard Zucker then released figures showing the total for New York COVID-19 nursing home deaths was 12,743 as of January 19th, up from 8,711 deaths New York officials previously acknowledged. And you can read more about that story in the New York Post. Natasha Vaughn and Aaliyah Snyder are reporting for Columbia Green Media. Former Hudson Police Commissioner and Chatham Police Chief Peter Volkman pleaded guilty February 11th to illegally collecting nearly $93,000 from the Village of Chatham and the state pension system. Volkman, 57, a resident of Stuyvesant, was arraigned on charges filed by the New York State Police following an investigation by the State Comptroller's Office, Columbia County District Attorney's Office, and the New York State Police. Volkman pleaded guilty to taking state and local pension funds in the amount of $74,222 and $18,607 from the village by falsifying mileage vouchers and other reimbursements. Chatham Mayor John Howe said the plea effectively terminates Volkman's tenure as an officer and as a chief of police. He must also pay restitution in the amount of $92,829. State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli said in a statement, and I quote, "instead of upholding the law, Volkman, the chief law enforcement officer of the village, defrauded the state's retirement system and his community," end quote. He went on to say taxpayers have the right to expect their public officials, including law enforcement officials, will act with honesty and integrity, end quote. Volkman was arraigned on various charges, including two counts of public corruption, second-degree corrupting of the government, and second-degree grand larceny. He pleaded guilty to one count of fourth-degree grand larceny and official misconduct. Columbia County Assistant District Attorney Ryan Carty said he was arraigned in Columbia County Court under Superior Court information. DiNapoli's office said Volkman was double-dipping the state pension system. Carty said, and I quote, "as a result of acts of omission, Mr. Volkman was able to steal $74,222 from the New York state pension system," end quote. According to DiNapoli, he hid public source income from 19 municipalities and school districts in excess of the statutory limit by funneling the earnings through a private business. Howe said financial irregularities involving Volkman came to light in a routine village review in February 2020. Volkman was placed on administrative leave from the Chatham Police Department last September after the village was served with a search warrant related to the investigation. The chief was suspended from all duties at that time. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. New York lawmakers this week introduced a bill intended to block state and local governments from providing resources or personnel to federal immigration enforcement officials. The measure would also bar the disclosure of information deemed sensitive to federal immigration officials as well. State Senator Julia Salazar said, and I quote, We cannot allow for our state and local governments to be complicit in the systematic abuse that ICE inflicts on our communities, including preventing people from accessing essential services. This is why it's urgent that we pass New York for All, our legislation that will prohibit New York's local and state law enforcement agencies from conspiring with ICE, end quote. Lawmakers previously approved, and Governor Andrew M. Cuomo signed into law, a bill that bars federal immigration officers from courthouses in New York. The push to restrict the federal government's immigration enforcement efforts were heightened during President Donald Trump's term. But lawmakers, as well as advocates who support the measure, point to ongoing concerns and mistrust within the immigrant community. Read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Chatham Village Board voted unanimously in February in a February 8th online meeting to pass a local law eliminating the village court and the position of village judge. The court will remain open until early April when the term of the current judge, James Borgia Foster, expires. The village board held a public hearing on the local law before the board's regular meeting. One resident, Lyle Locke, a former village board member, asked why the board planned to close the court and whether it was for financial reasons. Mayor John Howe said the court was previously sustained by the revenues it brought in, but in recent years, court finances have been, and I quote, pretty much a wash, end quote. However, as of last year, and I quote, we were in the red, end quote. In 2020, the court was forced to shut down due to the pandemic, resulting in no revenue from court activity. In addition to the cost of the court, the mayor said the village paid two police officers to be at the court when cases were being heard. Tickets and other court issues in the village will now go to the town courts in Chatham and Ghent. Part of the village is located in the town of Chatham and part in the town of Ghent. Of the four villages in Columbia County, only Kinderhook and Philmont still have their own courts. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Aaliyah Snyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Galvin Foundation housing developments planned for North 7th Avenue and Upper State Street on Hudson's north side do not have on-site parking, leading to an ongoing conversation about where future residents will park. As a result, the foundation will conduct another Depot District parking assessment after criticism of its initial study, which cited the number of available parking spaces for one night only. Although the plans for the Depot District to minimize on-site parking is in accordance with the Hudson Comprehensive Plan, there is no on-site parking to be provided for 138 new units in the area, raising the question, where will everyone park? At a meeting of the City Planning Board this week, Dan Kent, Galvin Foundation Vice President of Initiatives, mentioned that renting spaces from the city's Columbia Street Municipal Lot and One Hudson City Center were possible options. The foundation hired Mark Nadalny of Crichton Manning Engineering, LLP, to conduct a traffic and parking study to assess where residents of the planned buildings would park. Galvin has now asked Crichton Manning Engineering to conduct a follow-up assessment based on feedback from the planning board and the Hudson Fire Department, Kent said. Kent wrote, and I quote, "We are now in the process of identifying creative solutions for off-street parking, which include an assessment of available parking in the vicinity of the project site," end quote. The planning board agreed to begin the public hearing process March 9th. Kent said the results of the follow-up parking study and detailed parking recommendations will be completed in time for the hearing. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
White supremacy should also be on trial at Trump's impeachment. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. The nation is reliving the violent January 6th attack in the U.S. Capitol as Democratic Congress members deliver a devastating case against Donald Trump in the ex-president's historic second Senate impeachment trial. These nine House managers have assembled video and other evidence detailing Trump's months-long campaign of lies, claiming the 2020 election was stolen, and his consistent encouragement of violence leading up to the Capitol attack. Their case has been methodical and comprehensive, but leaves largely untouched a fundamental feature of the insurrection, white supremacy. Even if at least 67 senators vote to convict Trump for the single charge of incitement of insurrection, and more than half vote to ban him from ever again holding public federal office, this trial will not advance the struggle in this country to overcome systemic racism. The U.S. Capitol would be an appropriate location to launch an anti-racist movement. Soaring rhetoric has filled the hallowed halls for more than two centuries, extolling liberty, freedom, justice, and equality. Yet, as we were reminded Wednesday by Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, the delegate representing the U.S. Virgin Islands, one of the House impeachment managers,
this Capitol that was conceived by our founding fathers, that was built by slaves.
Throughout the videos of the Trump-incited mob rampaging through the building, many with Confederate and Nazi flags and other white supremacist symbols, we catch glimpses of the famous rotunda, the crypt beneath it, and Statuary Hall. Each of the 50 states sends two statues to the Capitol, and they're placed throughout the complex, as Statuary Hall can only accommodate 35 of them. Of the 22 statues from the 11 Confederate states, at least 15 were slave owners, and 10 of those remaining were Confederate officers or officials. Last June, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi sent a letter to the Joint Committee on the Library, which manages Statuary Hall, asking that statues of Confederates be removed. The law, however, requires the states that sent the statues to approve any removal or replacement. Virginia agreed and removed its statue of General Robert E. Lee, leader of the Confederate Army. A statue of African-American student organizer Barbara Johns will be put in its place. As a teen, Johns organized a strike at her high school protesting the wretched conditions of her segregated school. A legal case followed, becoming part of the landmark Brown v. Board of Education Supreme Court decision outlawing segregation in public schools.
And it took the Civil War for slavery to end. Of course, a Civil War that was between the Union and the Confederate States of America. In the Confederate States of America, the vice president of the Confederates was, of course, Alexander Stevens, who, last I checked, has a statue in Statuary Hall. And Alexander Stevens, I believe in 1862, said that this Confederacy is founded on the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, and slavery subordination to the superior race is his natural and normal condition.
That's Professor Ibram X. Kendi speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. It's not just dead Confederates in the Capitol. North Carolina honors Charles Brantley Aycock, who was just a child during the Civil War. He devoted his life to white supremacy. He was a lead organizer of the Wilmington Massacre of 1898, when a white mob of 2,000 armed racists attacked the elected biracial local government, destroyed businesses, including the only black-owned daily newspaper in the country, and killed between 60 and 300 black residents. Aycock's punishment? He was elected governor of North Carolina, then pushed through laws that disenfranchised African Americans. There are also many statues honoring so-called founding fathers who were slave owners, among them George Washington and Northerners Jonathan Trumbull of Connecticut and George Clinton, the first governor of New York. History professors Kendi and Keisha Blaine have just published a remarkable anthology titled 400 Souls, A Community History of African America, 1619 to 2019. It brings together 80 prominent African American writers, scholars, and activists, each of whom contributed an essay covering a five-year span from those 400 years of African American history.
We were really thinking about how do we connect past to the present.
That's Professor Blaine explaining the book on Democracy Now!
Helps us contextualize the history and to see some of the challenges that remain even to this day, to see how it connects to the period of slavery.
After Trump's racist supporters with their Confederate flags were cleared from the Capitol, leaving five dead and over 140 police officers injured, the National Guard moved in. several African-American soldiers posed for a photo with one of the Capitol's newest statues, that of Rosa Parks. These memorials matter. The Senate should convict ex-President Donald Trump, but the root causes of the insurrection, racism and white supremacy that Trump has embraced and exploited his whole life, will require far more work to overcome. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, a slight chance of snow after 4 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 23 degrees and wind chill values as low as minus 1 degree. Saturday night, snow is likely, mainly after 1 a.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 16 degrees. And on Sunday, a chance of snow, mainly after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a high near 32 degrees. And a slight chance of snow on Sunday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 18 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
WWGXC, WWGXC, Acre Hudson Catskill.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Paul and Liz of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
It's time to get up and stomp your feet to this great foot-stomping Transylvanian beat. Start nice and slow.
One, two.
Then speed up more.
One, two, three, four.
Then stomp away.
One,
cause
two,
we're
three,
about
four,
to find out
five,
the number of
the
day.
What's the number? Stomp, stomp. What's the number? Stomp, stomp. What is the number?
The number of the day rhymes with hen and pen. The number of the day is 10.
WGXC turns 10 this February, and our 10th anniversary pledge drive is coming to you soon.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10.
We're asking you to become a sustaining supporter to make sure the community has access to its own airwaves for another 10 years of community broadcasting.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If you like what you hear on WGXC, make a donation at wgxc.org and make it a sustaining donation. Something like 17 cents a day or $5 a month will help keep community radio on the airwaves. At least this one sliver, 90.7 FM, where all are welcome. WGXC.org/donate.
10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 tiny turtles on the telephone talking with the grocery men. We would like some less. Will you send us 10 heads, please? And 10 sweet potatoes and 10 rutabagas with the dimples on their knees. And send us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 big party jokes. 10 eggplants over easy. That's one of our little jokes. 10 leafy, leafy collard greens. And please make sure they're washed. Light up our eyes, brighten our lives with 10 banana squash. And we'll eat 10 cans of black-eyed peas. They give you good, strong muscles. 10 of those tasty sprouts, the ones that they call Brussels. We also like 10 mangoes, they're the favorite of our sister Gert. And one last thing, please do include 10 apples for dessert.
10.
It's WGXC's 10th anniversary this February. And all year, we will be celebrating 10 years of Community Voices on the radio. We'll have a special live broadcast and performance May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In. And if you become a sustaining supporter or increase your sustaining support of WGXC during the February pledge drive, we'll give you a ticket if you want for the Greenville Drive-In show May 26th at 7:30 p.m. with Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields performing, Anna Frizz also performing, Catskills' Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler and Jess Spear also performing, more artists to be announced at the WGXC 10th anniversary performance, the Greenville Drive-In, May 26th. And if you become a sustaining supporter for the first time during WGXC's February pledge drive, or increase your sustaining support of the community radio station, you can get a ticket to the Greenville Drive-In show with Stephen Merritt, Anna Frizz, Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, Jess Spear, and more, May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In for WGXC 90.7 FM.
Ten. Ten.
Beginning Tuesday, February 9th, some of WGXC's regular programming will be interrupted and preempted because we're covering the presidential impeachment trial in Congress. Pacifica Radio will provide coverage of the presidential impeachment trial. WGXC will air all the important parts on FM at 90.7 FM. We'll air more ceremonial aspects of the impeachment trial on our All Together Now web stream at wgxc.org/listen. And when the impeachment trial is on WGXC 90.7 FM, your regular programs will be on the All Together Now channel at wgxc.org/listen. So any preempted show you can still hear at the All Together Now channel at wgxc.org/listen and click on All Together Now to hear any of your favorite WGXC shows preempted by our impeachment coverage from Pacifica Radio. Tune in for complete coverage of the presidential impeachment trial from the U.S. Senate on wgxc.org and 90.7 FM.
Number
10.
Number
9.
Number
8.
Number
7.
Number
6.
Number
5.
Number
4.
Number
3.
Number
2.
Number
1.
Now let's head on a joyride with Bill McKay on guitar and Nathan Bowles on banjo and piano from their 2021 album Keys on the Drag City label. This is Joyride. Thank you.
number.
Nine.
Number.
Eight.
Number.
Seven.
Number.
Six.
Number.
Five.
Number.
Four.
Number.
Three.
Number.
Two.
Number.
One.
Here's a 2021 release from John Baptiste. The song is called I Need You.
Saxophone, yeah. Buck jumping down on a boulevard. I couldn't wait to blow my own horn. Ooh. It ain't wrong for you to play along. Playing this song till you die. Come on, come on.
In this world with a lot.
Chopping salt, and we fell in love on the boulevard. If you was Jenny, I guess I was far.
Run,
now it ain't wrong for you to sing along. Singing this song till you die.
In this world with a lot of problems, all we need is a little love. Thank you, thank you. Oh, you make me thank you, thank you for your love.
Number
8.
Thank you.
That was Landing Takeoff from the 2021 album Dark Matrix from reedist Daniel Carter and pianist Matthew Shipp.
Number 7.
I won't miss you. I'm so glad to see you go. I might even pop a bottle of champagne. Hope they arrest you, lock you up. But we all know that the you're through will leave a stain. 4 years of you felt like a decade in reverse. 4 years of you, low-level devil's wicked curse. 4 years of you, you made the virus even worse. Pack up your fans and take the evil that men do. We need a medal for living through 4 years of you. I won't hate you. I don't want you in my mind. Going forward, I'll pretend you don't exist. And when they rate you as the worst one of all time, what does it mean if they just slap you on the wrist? 4 years of you was watching God take in the piss. 4 years of you and thinking, do we deserve this? 4 years of you, we'll throw a party in our heads with all the family and friends who didn't live to see the end of 4 years of you. We need a medal for living through 4 years of you.
Number 6.
Here's a 2021 song from Hudson's Buke and Gase and So Percussion, who are partially based on the Bard College campus. The song is called Ancient Tool Gadget.
number 5.
From the 2021 album Dark Matrix, that was Daniel Carter on reeds and Matthew Shipp on piano with the song Element.
Number 4. Number 3.
Majority Leader, without objection, so ordered. Ms. Vandeveen? No, Mr. Castor, I'm sorry.
May I be recognized?
Yes, you are. You are recognized.
Senators,
glasses all fogged up.
Donald John Trump, by his counsel, is prepared to stipulate that if Representative Herrera Butler were to testify under oath as part of these proceedings, her testimony would be consistent with the statement she issued on February 12, 2021, and the former president's counsel is agreeable to the admission of that public statement into evidence at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Castor. Mr. Raskin.
Thank you, Mr. President. The managers are prepared to enter into the agreement. I will now read the statement. This is the statement of Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, February 12, 2021. In my January 12th statement in support of the article of impeachment, I referenced a conversation House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy relayed to me that he'd had with President Trump while the January 6th attack was ongoing. Here are the details. When McCarthy finally reached the president on January 6th and asked him to publicly and forcefully call off the riot, the president initially repeated the falsehood that it was Antifa that had breached the Capitol. McCarthy refuted that and told the president that these were Trump supporters. That's when, according to McCarthy, the president said, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are." Since I publicly announced my decision to vote for impeachment, I have shared these details in countless conversations with constituents and colleagues and multiple times through the media and other public forums. I told it to the Daily News of Longview on January 17th. I've shared it with local county Republican executive board members, as well as other constituents who asked me to explain my vote. I shared it with thousands of residents on my telephone town hall on February 8th. Mr. President, I now move that the Senate admit the statement into evidence.
Objection, and without objection, the statement will be admitted into evidence. And does either party wish to make any further motions related to witnesses or documents at this time?
Mr. President, the President's counsel have no further motions.
Discussion.
And, Mr. President, we have no further motions either.
Excuse me. Then the chair would note that neither party wishes to make further motions under Section 6 of Senate Resolution 47. Therefore, the next question is on admission of the evidence submitted by both parties pursuant to Section 8 of the resolution. The majority leader's recognized.
So now, as we move to another matter, I'm advised that the House managers have no objection to the admission of evidence proposed to be admitted by the former president's counsel under the provisions of Section 8 of Senate Resolution 47, and that the president's counsel have no objections to the evidence proposed to be admitted into evidence by the House managers, pursuant to Section 8 of the resolution, as agreed to by Leader McConnell and myself a few days ago. Both parties have made timely filings of this evidence with the Secretary of the Senate and have provided copies to each other. I therefore ask unanimous consent that the Senate dispense with the provisions of Section 8A of Senate Resolution 47 and that the materials submitted by both parties be admitted into evidence subject to the provisions of Section 8C of that resolution, which provides that the admission of this evidence does not constitute a concession by either party as to the truth of the matters asserted by the other party, and that each senator shall decide for him or herself the weight to be given such evidence. This request has the approval of both parties and the Republican leader.
Without objection, it is so ordered. Okay, then pursuant to the provisions of Senate Resolution 47, the Senate has provided for up to 4 hours of closing arguments. They'll be equally divided between the managers on the part of the House of Representatives and the counsel for the former president. And pursuant to Rule 22 of the Rules of Procedure and Practice in the Senate when sitting on impeachment trials, the argument shall be open and closed on the part of the House of Representatives. So the chair recognizes Mr. Manager Raskin to begin the presentation on the part of the House of Representatives. Mr. Raskin, under Rule 22, you may reserve time if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, Before I proceed, it was suggested by defense counsel that Donald Trump's conduct during the attack, as described in Congresswoman Butler's statement, is somehow not part of the constitutional offense for which former President Trump has been charged. I want to reject that falsehood and that fallacy immediately. After he knew that violence was underway at the Capitol, President Trump took actions that further incited the insurgents to be more inflamed and to take even more extreme, selective, and focused action against Vice President Mike Pence. Former President Trump also, as described by Congressman Butler's notes, refused requests to publicly, immediately, and forcefully call off the riots. And when he was told that the insurgents inside the Capitol were Trump supporters, the president said, quote, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are." Think about that for a second. This uncontradicted statement that has just been stipulated as part of the evidentiary record. The president said, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people," meaning the mobsters, the insurrectionists, "are more upset about the election than you are." That conduct is obviously part and parcel of the constitutional offense that he was impeached for, namely incitement to insurrection. That is continuing incitement to the insurrection. The conduct described not only perpetuated his continuing offense, but also provides to us here today further decisive evidence of his intent to incite the insurrection in the first place. When my opposing counsel says that you should ignore the president's actions after the insurrection began, that is plainly wrong. And it, of course, reflects the fact that they have no defense to his outrageous, scandalous, and unconstitutional conduct in the middle of a violent assault on the Capitol that he incited. Senators, think about it for a second. Say you light a fire and you're charged with arson. And the defense counsel says, "Everything that I did after the fire started is irrelevant." And the court would reject that immediately and say, "That's not true at all. It's extremely relevant to whether or not you committed the crime. If you run over and try to put out the flames, if you get lots of water and say, 'Help, help, there's a fire,' if you call for help, a court will infer that, could infer that you didn't intend for the fire to be lit in the first place. They would accept your defense, perhaps, that it was all an accident. It was an all accident. Accidents happen with fire. But if, on the other hand, when the fire erupts, you go and you pour more fuel on it, you stand by and you watch it gleefully, any reasonable person will infer that you not only intended the fire to start, but that once it got started and began to spread, you intended to continue to keep the fire going."
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
Of course your conduct while a crime is ongoing is relevant to your culpability, the offense, but also directly relevant, directly illuminating to what your purpose was originally. What was your intent? And any court in the land would laugh out of court any criminal defendant who said, "What I did after I allegedly killed that person is irrelevant to whether or not I intended to kill them." I mean, come on. Donald Trump's refusal not only to send help, but also to continue to further incite the insurgents against his own vice president, provides further decisive evidence of both his intent to start this violent